the month of July, and it's the 9th anniversary of my teacher's passing. We'll have a ceremony for him on Saturday when we have our one-day sit, and I want to talk about him then, but I want to recognize that this is the actual day. And all of his various places are having sesshin to honor his memory, his extraordinary memory. We're accumulating memories of him now for a big celebration for the 10th anniversary next July. And already so many stories are coming in. About his very unusual way of teaching and of being in the world, and the unusual way that he left it. It was that way all the way through. So I'll talk more about it on Saturday. The sit goes from 9 to 4. And you can come, you know, for part of it, as you know. Meanwhile, we're in the middle of the Diamond Sutra. And you haven't met, John hasn't met Joe. Joe, John. I think you both know everybody else, is that right? It's not right? Do it around again. It's hard to remember. Nice. Nice to see you, John. Yeah. So we're on chapter 17, which in the book is 283. And we need someone to read it. It's someone willing to give it a read? Or maybe read half and then somebody else read the other half?
Of a being cannot be called a bodhisattva. Neither can someone who creates the perception of a life or even the perception of a soul be called a bodhisattva. And why not? So Buddhi, there is no such dharma as setting forth on the bodhisattva path. What do you think, Buddhi? When the Tathagata was the Tipankara Tathagata, did he realize any such dharma as unexcited perfect enlightenment? Yes, the Venerable Sukhuri answered, Bhagavan, as I understand the meaning of what the Tathagata has taught, when the Tathagata was with Tipankara Tathagata, the Arhan, the fully enlightened one, He did not realize any such dharma as unexcelled perfect enlightenment. And to this the Buddha replied, so it is, Subhuti, so it is. When the Tathagata was with the Ankara Tathagata, the Arhan, the fully enlightened one, he did not realize any such dharma as unexcelled perfect enlightenment. Subhuti, if the Tathagata had realized any dharma, the Ankara Tathagata would not have prophesied, young man, in the future you shall become the Tathagata, the Arhan, the fully enlightened one named Shakyamuni. Subhuti, it was because the Tathagata, the Arhan, the fully enlightened one, did not realize any such dharma as unexcelled perfect enlightenment that Dipankara Tathagata prophecy, young man, in the future you shall become the Tathagata, the Arhan, the fully enlightened one named Shakyamuni.
And how so, Tathagata? Subhuti is another name for what is truly real. Tathagata, Subhuti, is another name for the Dharma with the beginning. Tathagata, Subhuti, is another name for the end of Dharmas. Tathagata, Subhuti, is another name for what never begins. And how so? No beginning, Subhuti, is the highest truth. Subhuti, if anybody should claim the Tathagata, the Arhan, the fully enlightened one realized unexcelled perfect enlightenment, such a claim would be untrue. Subhuti, they would be making a false statement about me. And how so? Subhuti, the Tathagata did not realize any such dharma as unexcelled perfect enlightenment. Furthermore, Subhuti, in the dharma realized or taught by the Tathagata, there is nothing true and nothing false. Thus, the Tathagata says, all dharmas are Buddha dharmas. And how so? All dharmas, Subhuti, are said by the Tathagata to be no dharmas. Thus, are all dharmas all Buddha dharmas. Subhuti, imagine a perfect person with an immense perfect body. The Venerable Subhuti said, Tathagata, this perfect person whom the Tathagata says has an immense perfect body, but Gaudan, the Tathagata says, has no body. Thus, it is called an immense perfect body. The Buddha said, so it is, Subhuti. And if a Bodhisattva says, I shall liberate other beings, that person is not called a Bodhisattva. And why not? Subhuti, is there any such dharma as Bodhisattva? The Venerable Subhuti replied, no indeed, Bhagavan, there is no such dharma as Bodhisattva. The Buddha said, and being Subhuti, beings are said by the Tathagata to be no beings. Thus they are called beings. And thus does the Tathagata say all dharmas have no self, all dharmas have no life, no individuality, and no soul. Subhuti, if a Bodhisattva should thus claim, I shall bring about the transformation of the world, such a claim would be untrue. And how so? The transformation of the world, Subhuti, the transformation of the world is said by the Tathagata to be no transformation. Thus, it is called the transformation of the world. Subhuti, when a Bodhisattva resolves on selfless dharmas as selfless dharmas, the Tathagata, the Arhan, the fully enlightened one, pronounces that person a fearless Bodhisattva.
It isn't the way we usually think. It just isn't. Which is very helpful. It breaks the the concrete way that we tend to think about things, the logical way that we think things should be. But actually, in order to describe the way things are, it has to be said in this complicated way, that things are in a relative way, but in the ultimate way, they're not. And we live in a world of relativity and live fully and with great interest. But if we believe that what we encounter is real and solid and lives forever in any kind of way, whether it's going to heaven or the Platonic idea that a chair has an ideal chair up in heaven somewhere and every chair represents it. And Buddha said that that's just thinking. If you really experience life, if you really experience your own life, you begin to see that if you whatever you call things isn't what they are. It's provisional. It's all provisional. A chair is a chair as long as they're sit-inable, but they can be transformed in an instant with a hatchet or a puppy or a fire into something else. So the chair is all of a piece of us. We are the chairs that we sit in many ways. That's why we bow to them. And yet, none of it is permanent. None of it is real in a lasting way. So Chao Ming calls this chapter, No Self After All. Darn, no self after all. And they say that this is the chapter that Weineng heard when he was hauling wood in his little village in the south of China and was so moved by it that he asked the fellow where he learned it and then moved all the way, walked all the way to northern China to find his teacher and study this very thing, this Diamond Sutra. So, and chapter 10, seven chapters before this one, is the one that he heard from his teacher, which finished his training with his teacher. The one that says not to give birth to a thought attached to anything, which is really the secret of this. It's not that there isn't anything, it's just that we attach our thinking to things instead of seeing that, that there's no way to hold anything. In the Tibetan practice, they say, just rest. Let your mind rest. Don't try to grasp things. There's no attainment, we say. Nothing to attain. And yet our life is full and interesting. So in this chapter, Subhuti is repeating his very first question, isn't he? He asked in the very beginning, how should a bodhisattva be? What kind of person is a bodhisattva? And now, having gone forth and begun to see beyond his arhat practice, he is curious about it again. He sees a lot more. Weineng said, if there is no self at all, how can there be others? But in order to liberate people, we establish a provisional self. Thus follows a chapter on ultimate selflessness. So even Buddha said, I. Even Buddha had a personality. Every Buddha is someone, as all of us are. We get up in the morning and we have to be somebody. I mean, we're a little off if we don't establish some kind of self for ourself. And yet if we take it seriously, if it becomes a fixed idea, if we're attached to it in any way, then we come to grief. A lot of people have asked me about my deep disappointment when my surgery was put off. And I thought, that's funny. I didn't feel any disappointment at all. It just happened. It was kind of curious. I thought, that's weird. But that a disappointment is extra. That's on top of what actually happens. What happens is that it didn't work out. And then we can add all kinds of things on top of that, our hopes and our fears and our expectations, and none of it is true. The only true thing is what actually happened. It saves a lot of grief not to have too much, not to have any hope. Tao Yuan said the Buddha's previous answer was intended to eliminate the perception of a reality outside our minds. This answer is intended to eliminate attachment to anything inside our minds. So being attached to our ideas, our thoughts, it's really the same thing as being attached to our dog or our food. It's just a different way of seeing it. The inside and the outside are just two aspects of the same one thing. But we tend to be attached in both ways. This is my house. This is my child. This is my idea. If a bodhisattva, Red Pine said, is reached a goal, that would establish limits to what is necessarily without limits. We have heard in previous chapters that the body of merit of a bodhisattva who practices this teaching has no limits and thus transcends the boundaries of time and space. And that's why we say the bodhisattva practice has no beginning and no end. We don't ever get anywhere. It's kind of disappointing for people when they begin to practice. They think, I'll get all better. You know, this will make my life improved in every way. And then you begin to realize, maybe not. Maybe that's not what it is. Not what it's about. Tao Yuan said, as long as there is some dharma you can realize, you end up with delusions and end up with attachment to dharmas. So it's tricky. We study and we work at our practice. There's a lot of effort in it. Sometimes it's called effortless effort. To somehow come to terms with or to meet with our life itself, our understanding. And yet, if we think we have something, it slips right away. It's really the opposite. When we realize we have nothing, if we're able to let that be and not hold on to it, there's a kind of slippery freedom in it. Tao Yuan said the first half of the Diamond Sutra explains how to think about liberating other beings while remaining free of the perception of being. From this chapter on, the second half explains how to get free of the perception of liberation and even the perception of future Buddhahood. So it's easy to get caught in the compassion mode and be the bodhisattva of compassion and wisdom and operate in a particular way, which is being imposed on the actual way, which we don't really know. So this Tathagata, this funny word, means thus come, and it also means thus gone. And it's a way of talking about ultimate being, or the wholeness of being, which isn't some static, fixed thing. It's not a dharma like a chair or a person. It's what they say, truly real. Because a Tathagata puts an end to all existence, past, present, and future, and is free of perceptions of coming and going. So it's a way of seeing how things are as they come and go. People are being born at this moment and people are dying at this moment. People are pouring down the freeway in their cars and people are walking in, across the sands of the Sahara on a camel. It's all happening continually. This great body of us. It's not some big, spacey kind of magical thing. It's how the life and the dynamic of our life is all working at the same time. We can't even really conceive it. And it's coming and coming and going continually. A friend of mine lost her daughter in a terrible accident. She burned in a fire. And Coben did a funeral. It was the first Zen funeral I ever saw. And we went up to the burial ground, and the coffin was at the edge of the pit. And Coben stood at the coffin and knocked on it, and he said, "Tathagata, we don't know where you come from. We don't know where you go." And then he shouted "Tathagata" at the top of his voice. There sent a shiver through everything. It's like, that's it. That's the hugeness of it. So the other word that needs a little help is the word dharma itself, which means at the beginning to grasp or to hold. And so that's what we do. We see something and we hold it with our eyes. We hold it with our understanding and our thought. And holding is one thing. Holding means we can easily let it go. Grasping means to grab and to clutch. And that's where it gets difficult. So much of the teaching is about what we call letting go, which doesn't mean that we don't encounter and be with all dharmas, because we do, but we don't, if we try to grasp them, we become troubled. And letting things go their own way lets us go our way also. So Wineng says, where subject and object do not arise, me and you, it and me, don't arise, when we're able to just be with whatever is there without separating ourselves from it, then this is called samadhi. This is what happens to us when we sit. We usually sit down being some particular person, but as we sit, all those ideas about us, about who we are, who we think we are, become unimportant. Because the being of us is the reality. Samadhi, he said, means a pure mind. So we can pass these out. Are there questions? Thank you. Pass them on. Wendy?
You said, indicated it was futile to put yourself in a bodhisattva mindset of wisdom and compassion. Because the situation called us something else?
Well, it's more like wisdom and compassion come out of, doesn't come out of intending ourselves to be something. It comes from relaxing our sort of sharp ambition, our grasping mind. And once that's relaxed, then wisdom and compassion are our natural mind. That's what's already there. So if we act, and they say that acting as if is a good idea, that it gives us maybe our unconscious some kind of idea of where we're intending to go or where our life wants to go. But the reality is that we're already that. So we just practice to step out of our own way. Well, it's just about 8 o'clock.